ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 5. Let's see what we can do here. Okay, it's all right, actually. And this is text 31. Ati Sukumara Kara Charanodaha Stalavipula Bhavangsha Galavadan Vadanadya Vavya. Okay, this better be closer. Gala Vadanadi Avayava Vinyasa Prakriti Sundara Subhava Hasa Sumako Navanalina Dalaya Mana Shishira Tararunayata Nayana Ruchiraha Sadrasha Subhaga Kapola Garna Kanta Naso Vigudha Smita Vadana Mahotsavena Pura Vanitanam Manasi Kusuma Sharasanam Upadadhanaha Parag Avalambamana Kutila Jatila Kapisha Kesha Bhuri Bharo Vadhuta Malina Nija Sharirena Graha Grahita Ivadrishyata. Lord Rishabhdev's hands, feet, and chest were very long. His shoulders, face, and limbs were all very delicate and symmetrically proportioned. His mouth was beautifully decorated with his natural smile, and he appeared all the more lovely with his reddish eyes spread wide like the petals of a newly grown lotus flower covered with dew in the early morning. The irises of his eyes were so pleasing that they removed all the troubles of everyone who saw him. His forehead, ears, neck, nose, and all his other features were very beautiful. His gentle smile always made his face beautiful, so much so that he even attracted the hearts of married women. It was as though they had been pierced by arrows of Cupid. About his head was an abundance of curly, matted brown hair. His hair was disheveled because his body was dirty and not taken care of. He appeared as if he were haunted by a ghost. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurn Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mahyam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Shagrajatam Shahagana Raganatan Vitamstam Sajivam Sadvaitam Shavadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Shahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Brindavaneshari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpitarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Pyevacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Here we read of the bodily features of Lord Rishabhdev, who's an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although he was performing the pastimes of an avadhuta, a person who doesn't care about any material circumstances, and therefore his body was, he wasn't taking care of his body or his appearance. Still, he was so beautiful. Krishna, one of Krishna's qualities is that he has all beauty. Aishvaryasya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yashasya, Shriya. He has all beauty. And therefore, his plenary incarnation, Lord Rishabhdev, also showed beautiful features. It's specifically mentioned here that he was so attractive that even married women would be struck by his beauty and attracted. Mahotsavena pura vinitanam manasi kusuma sharasanam upadhanaha. Kusuma sarasanam means Cupid, who has arrows made of flowers, kusum. Those arrows are more powerful than the ones that we know of, than the ones you see on the archery range or in the gladiator movies. The arrows of Cupid are so powerful. And here it's indicated that struck by those arrows, even the married women were attracted. There are rules and regulations concerning attraction, because every man is attracted by women, women are attracted by men, and simply that a man is married or a woman is married doesn't make him or her unattractive. And therefore, there are rules in human society for regulating that attraction. In the dog society and the monkey society and kindred species, there are no such rules, therefore they have sex like monkeys and dogs. But the human beings have a higher purpose in life. The monkeys and dogs are basically meant for sense gratification. That's why they're in those lower species of life. But the human being is meant for spiritual realization, Brahma Jigyasa. He's meant for spiritual inquiry. And if he wants to make progress in the human life, then he has to, he has to regulate this force of sexual attraction. Whether one is brahmachari, sannyasi, vanaprastha, grahastha, every human being has to regulate this force within. Otherwise, his life will be a wreck. These principles that Srila Prabhupada gave, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, are not particularly principles of Krishna consciousness. They're actually the basic principles of human behavior. But one can't make substantial progress in Krishna consciousness until he's a human being. And therefore, these principles are to be followed. Sex attraction is, from one point of view, if a man is married and a woman is married, there's a special attraction to their messing around. Specifically because it's illegal. Specifically because it's against the rules. The risk involved in being found out, the risk involved in overstepping the boundaries of civilized human propriety, make it more attractive. Just as kids like to write graffiti on subway cars, or you don't have subway cars here, but walls or what have you. And if it were legal, it wouldn't be as fun. It's the illegality of it that makes it specifically more attractive. Or website hacking, those who can strive to get into somebody else's computer, especially if it's the government's, and start doing whatever they want. It's more attractive than just doing something legal. The risk involved makes it a challenge and makes it specifically tasty. So by Maya's illusory power, there's a special thrill involved in overstepping the bounds of proper behavior, and therefore people do it. And of course they make their lives miserable. Because rajasastu palam dukkham, from the mode of passion, misery follows. Krishna, also in the spiritual world, he oversteps the rules of proper behavior. For Krishna, there are no rules. Abhigya swarat, he's independent, he can do as he likes. But just to increase the transcendental loving exchanges between himself and his the living entities who are part and parcel of him, or his spiritual energies, his yogamaya creates the impression of rules so that they can be overstepped. None of the gopis are married. It's only by Yoga Maya's projection that they appear to be married to someone else. They're all connected with Krishna. Prabhupada, sometimes if Krishna were criticized, Krishna was dancing with other men's wives, Prabhupada would say that all the women belong to Krishna. You're dancing with someone else's wife. So Krishna, asnaviram shuddham apapavidham. Whatever he does is pure and purifying. There's no question of impropriety for him. Mami vamsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. All the living beings are parts and parcels of him. Or the principal gopis are all expansions of his internal energy. So for Krishna to be involved with his internal energy is perfectly pure. He's perfectly pure. There's no nothing even slightly unwholesome in Krishna's activities. Because they're all performed on the spiritual platform. They have nothing to do with the bodily conception of life. Because Krishna is Purushottam, the supreme enjoyer, he's entitled to take part in enjoyable relationships with all of his devotees. And the devotees can perform no higher function than pleasing Krishna in transcendental love. This is the situation of the spiritual reality. And these appearances, like this is somebody else's wife, or these are all just arrangements of yoga maya to add spice to the preparation. The material world is something else again. In the material world, none of us is a purusha. None of us is legitimately an enjoyer. By illusion, we're imagining that we're enjoyers, and therefore we're suffering. Purusha prakritisto hi bhunkte prakritijan gunan karanam gunasangasya sadasad yoni janmeshu. The living entities imagine themselves to be purushas, enjoyers, and try to exploit the resources of the material nature in so many different ways. Natural resources like petroleum and gold and water, they'll fight over. Or resources like money, of course. And then the men and women are also resources. We say human resources. We try to hire some people and exploit them. And specifically, we exploit one another. Men are exploiting women. Women are exploiting men. And we're thinking that we're enjoying. But the result is karanam gunasangasya. By our programs for enjoyment, we're becoming associated with the three modes of material nature with which we have no actual association. Pankajangri Prabhu was talking about that yesterday. We actually have nothing to do with material nature, but we're imagining that we do. And by that imagination, we try to enjoy and we become associated with these gunas, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Sex life especially means passion and ignorance. And the result is sadasad yoni janmeshu, that we're born in, again and again in different species of life, higher and lower, to go on with our program of trying to enjoy. The sexual attraction is there in every conditioned soul in relationship to this body. But it misleads the living being, traps him. Maituna agara. Srila Prabhupada said that this material world is the world of sex life, the shackles of sex life. The living being wants to enjoy, and he becomes trapped. Mm-hmm. He becomes trapped. When Krishna was asked by Arjuna, why is it that someone does something against dharma, against his duty? Why is it? What's forcing him to do it? Anichchan napi varshnaya balad eva niyojita. As if he were being forced helplessly. Kamesha krodhesha rajaguna samudbhava. It's kama, lust, which degrades into, further degrades into anger, and which is the enemy of all the living beings. In the third chapter, the Lord explains this at some length. The living being is covered by different degrees of lust. Avritam gyanam etena gyanino nityavairina. The wise living entity, gyanina, we're Satchidananda. Chit means we have knowledge, we're supposed to be wise. But our wisdom is covered by our eternal enemy, kama rupena, in the form of lust. Dushpurena analena cha, which burns like fire and which is insatiable. The more we try to satisfy lusty desires, the more they grow. It's not that And that's, yes, that's a fact. It's not that sexual activity leads to peace, tranquility, satisfaction, and all of that. On the contrary, it leads to more desire. The more one engages in lusty activities, the more one wants to engage in lusty activities. This is called dushpura, insatiable, the characteristic of being insatiable. Kanduyanena karayor iva dukkha dukkham. Prahlad Maharaj says it's like scratching of an itch. The more you scratch, the more it itches. Iva dukkha dukkham. And it results in more miseries. Bahu dukkha bhajam. So, therefore, Krishna says, tasmat tvam indriyanyado niyamya bharatarshava. From the very beginning, one should control the senses by higher intelligence. And in this way, overcome papmanam prajahi hyenam, conquer this force of lust, jnana vijnana nashanam, which destroys jnana and vijnana, knowledge and realization. It makes one a fool. The person who is overwhelmed by lusty desires becomes a fool. There's one practical example. I know of one friend who is a young art student, and he, skinny guy, as skinny as me or more, and not as tall. And he became attracted. He fell in love with someone's wife. Not only someone's wife, but the wife of like a 300-pound Italian construction worker. This is called Jnana Vijnana Nashanam. And it was nearly Deha Nashanam too, nearly the end of his physical life. There's no difference. Sex is sex. One woman, another woman, another woman, another woman, another man. Sex is sex. It's basically the same thing. There was a story that there was a Bhagavatam story, I think, a woman whose husband was quite old and ugly. And she was a very devoted woman, very chaste woman, always took care of her husband. But she saw that he was dissatisfied. So she asked him, I'm trying to serve you as best as I can, but I see you seem always dissatisfied. So he said, yes, that actually I'm after one prostitute. And this not a prostitute, what would you say? A society girl, Prabhupada said, a mistress, a high-class prostitute. So the wife went to the home of that prostitute and just began serving. She began sweeping, began doing things. Day after day she's doing that, and the prostitute said, what's all this? Why are you doing these things for me? Yes, I want you to see my husband. Prostitute began to laugh. You don't know how expensive I am. But the woman went on serving. I think she herself took up prostitution. And finally, the day came when her husband was able to meet that prostitute. So he came to the prostitute's flat. And they have quite civilized system. First, she offered him nice food. And she offered everything in two pots. Sabji in one pot and sabji in another pot. Everything, one in an iron pot, another in a gold pot. everything, two pots. So she served everything, and she said, "So how do you like it?" He said, "It's very nice, but why everything in two pots?" "No, first taste everything." So he tasted in the gold pot, "How do you like it?" "Oh, it's very nice." Then the iron pot, "How do you like it?" "Oh, it's very nice." "Why everything in two pots?" "Because you're such a fool that you don't know that the same thing that you're getting with your wife is the same thing you would get with me. There's no difference. But you're such a rascal that you're imagining that you'll get some celestial pleasure here. You're just a rascal." So in that way instructed him. So the human life means that sex life should be regulated. Either do without it or limit it. That limitation is marriage. Krishna says, dharma viruddha bhuteshu, bhuteshu kamosmi paratarshava. Sex life, which is not contrary to dharma, is a representation of myself. So not contrary to dharma means that one has to stay within marriage. Not going outside for extracurricular enjoyment. Imagining that one is on the level of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada said that sometimes, that we're all trying to be God. I always wondered, you know, what does that mean that we're all trying? I'm not trying to be God. But practically we're trying to enjoy, which is the business of God. Let me enjoy like God. No, that doesn't work. Even married life is not meant for sense gratification. Prabhupada wrote to one devotee, newly married, "Your wife is not a machine for sense gratification." Your wife is not a machine for sense gratification. The married life is meant for spiritual advancement. And sex life is there to be controlled. Ado, tasmat tvam indriyan yado, from the very beginning. Because if it's, once you let things go, it becomes harder and harder to stop. Debt, fire, and disease, not seen to, they increase. Or train running downhill, you know, or your car when your brakes aren't working and you're moving down a hill. What you could have stopped at the top of the hill, now halfway down, is going to be difficult. Therefore, Krishna says, from the very beginning, control. Control the senses. Whether one is married or one is not married, one has to control the senses. Senses out of control and Krishna consciousness don't work well together. One must control the senses. Even what to speak of Krishna consciousness, even normal life doesn't work if we don't control our senses. Just in terms of making one's own life miserable in terms of the three modes of material nature, if we don't control, the less we control our senses, the more miserable we will be. The more we become servants of the senses, the more miserable we will be. So every human being, therefore, has to control his senses. And the advantage of Krishna consciousness is that it provides something higher to control the senses for. The materialist, why should I control my senses? Because they're in ignorance, they don't understand what the material consequences are. They think they can just taste and run and not get hit. That's their foolishness. But apart from that, they have no higher idea. If not sense gratification, then what? That they don't know. Or if you say, the higher purpose in life is there. Why should one gratify one's senses? One should serve God. Sounds totally unattractive. put on a suit and tie and say pious words and sing hymns and serve God. Thoroughly unattractive prospect. Why should I serve God? But when we come to Krishna, we find that Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure. He's not merely a threatening and a powerful and threatening autocrat whom one is obliged to serve or else, lest he smite thee with a curse. He is, by nature, the reservoir of all enjoyment, all pleasure. He likes to enjoy, and he likes to involve, to exchange enjoyment with the living beings. In our healthy condition, we do that. We serve Krishna, and we enjoy by service. We take part in Krishna's enjoyment. By giving service, by giving pleasure to Krishna, we get our natural share of pleasure automatically. We don't have to separately seek pleasure. Even in devotional service, we don't have to separately seek pleasure. What do they say? Virtue is its own reward. The most virtuous activity is devotional service, and no other reward is required, that you did devotional service, so now you're going to get this. The highest reward is devotional service itself. The highest enjoyment, the highest pleasure, the highest knowledge, the highest everything is to be engaged in the service of Krishna. Okay, let's see what kind of questions we have this morning. Mm-hmm. Yes, Naikatma Prabhu. The traveling microphone. Naikatma Prabhu.
Thank you, Maharaj. I wanted to ask a question that was asked in an earlier class, just to see or hear your response to it. But we hear that initially Rishabhdev was very socially acceptable.
He was the king. One's more socially acceptable than the king.
Then later on he started acting like a madman. So the question is, why would he provoke people to commit offense against the personality of Godhead?
Why would he provoke people to commit offense to the personality of Godhead? Of course, that was not the purpose of what he was doing, but the purpose was to demonstrate the importance of detachment from everything material. He was the king. He was opulent. He had 100 sons. He was set materially. And he became like a vagabond. It means completely detached, completely oblivious of all material considerations. That was his pastime. We're attached. We have one wife and one child, and we're thinking, how can I leave? I have responsibilities. My son is still working on his doctorate, and he needs my support, or my this, or my that. No, please put your camera down. Please put your camera down. Thank you. I can't leave home because of this. I can't leave home because of that, and the other reason, and so on. And Rishabhdev sets the example that he's responsible for the whole kingdom and big family, but he just, at the mature time, hands it over, Bharat, you're in charge, and walks away. Just as Parikshit Maharaj walked away from the kingdom of the world, So Rishabhdev walked away and just gave up all consideration of even taking care of his body. You know, we'll take sannyas, but we'll still be, we'll choose very carefully some nice soap and some nice clothes and some nice, because we, after all, have to preach to the public. So we have to look respectable. But Rishabhdev didn't care. He just set an extreme example that just forget this body even. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Puri had said, Kaviraj Goswami says he didn't know whether his body was on or off. You know, whether he was wearing it or not wearing it. He was just indifferent to what was going on with his body. So Rishabhdev Maharaj set that example. But in consequence, the people became antagonistic or offensive, and so then he was off by himself and so on. Is that okay? Yeah. Prabhupati Prabhu.
What a person's desiring is you know, obviously very private sort of affair. And
a person's desires are his own private affair.
Yeah, private affair. I mean, they're going on within your mind, within one's mind. And, you know, other people aren't aware of each other's desires. Of course, Supersoul would be aware of...
A little louder or...
Supersoul, of course.
Supersoul's aware.
He's aware of everybody's desires. He's aware of the psychic movements of every living entity. So I can understand how the Supersoul could be aware of and respond to the desires of every living entity. So my question is, where does Maya come into the picture? Is Maya also...
Maya's all-pervading in the material world. It's her place. She gets... that's also mentioned in the third chapter where Krishna is talking about kama. He talks about where kama or lust resides. Indriyani mano buddhirasyadhishtanam uchite. In the senses, in the mind, in the intelligence, lust is situated. Etai, through these, vimohayati, esha. She bewilders the living entity. Gyanam avrityadehinam, covering his knowledge. It's not just that Maya's out there in Hollywood or something. Maya's right inside, in the mind. Prabhupada explains in his purport that one hears about sense gratification and it enters through the ears and the mind starts to become a reservoir of what we've heard. And then the intelligence becomes a slave of the polluted mind and starts thinking, wow, how do we get that? Starts thinking, scheming, planning, coming up with something. Rationalizing also, well, it's, you know, Prabhupada was very merciful, he understood, and what will the repression accomplish, and you know, can come up with all sorts of, intelligence is very capable, it can come up with all sorts of good ideas of why we should become degraded. That's, we were hearing this morning, kamais taister kritagana. By lust, one's knowledge is stolen away. So Maya's, it's an inside job. It's an inside job. She's already got her, she's already entrenched inside in the mind. Therefore, one has to purify the mind. One has to purify the senses and purify the intelligence by chanting Hare Krishna, hearing about Krishna, and so on. Yes, Suhas Prabhu.
Well, it almost seems like, you know, in the Christian concept, the devil is almost as powerful as the Supreme Lord. I mean, you know, it's like they
just,
like to, they like
if
to
I can
movies.
Interrupt you just for a second,
sure.
The devil's almost as The Christians say another thing also. The devil is in the loins. Go ahead.
Well, I guess that kind of answers the question. But, you know, just in conceptualization, it, they like to make movies where the devil is just so extremely powerful, you know, that even like a very holy man and with all of the paraphernalia and regalia of a spiritualist and a true believer and follower, and still the devil can just like laugh at them practically and just wave his hand and shoo them away. So we may have this very uncontrolled mind, but if there's a sincere, aspiring devotee chanting sincerely, but still there's this, you know, Maya is so powerful that still that sincere, most faithful servant of the Lord can have a fall down.
Mm.
So you understand the dichotomy in the sense that how can it be so powerful that faithful servant or like the devil can...
Well, the devil's no slouch. The Maya is very powerful. Krishna says, Mama Maya Duratya. Maya is practically divinely empowered. So much she can accomplish. And especially, what is that? Kusuma Sharasanam. She's armed with these arrows, which are super powerful. So the material world, we're conditioned since time immemorial. We're in the material world where the whole atmosphere is binding. Therefore, one has to be, to get out of the material world is not a small project. It requires extreme dependence on Krishna. Mam eva ye prapadyante, one has to surrender to Krishna. Mayam etam taranti te. And in the neophyte stage, one has to be very careful. One has to be very careful. If we think, well, it can mix a little bit, one has to be so careful. Maya is so powerful, and we're thinking, La Prabhupada gave an instruction one time. I don't know if it was here in New Dwarka, but it was someplace. He said, the men and women should not serve together behind the altar. Behind, you know, when the doors are closed. Men and women should not serve behind. That means, even in the deity room, Maya will act. And then Prabhupada said, unless the husband is there. And the devotee he was talking to said, unless some man is there. No, unless the husband is there. Prabhupada made the point about two or three times. Maya is so powerful. What is that? Matras vasra duhitra va naiva viktasano asano bhavet balavan indriya grama vidvamsam apikarshati. One should not sit alone with one's mother, with one's sister, with one's daughter. Naviviktasana. In a private place, one shouldn't sit with them. Okay, we've read the headlines. We know about, you know, fathers and daughters or so many things that go on, these weird things. But that's those people. No, Bhagavatam says, Balaman Indriya Grama Vidvamsamapi. The senses are so powerful that even Vidvan, a learned person, a knowledgeable person, will be dragged. Karshati means dragged by the power of the senses. Therefore, the rules and regulations, that Prabhupada makes this point in Bhagavad Gita, rules and regulations have to be followed strictly. They're for our benefit. They're for our benefit. We're not so great. Maya is so powerful. And we are so vulnerable. Therefore, one has to be very careful. And so many rules and regulations are there. All right, when you're a Paramhansa, you can forget all the rules and regulations, although they don't. The Goswamis followed more strictly than anyone. So they're following so strictly. It's not that, well, because they were Goswamis, they followed, no, even though they were Goswamis, they followed so strictly. They didn't have to. They were liberated souls. So then what to speak of us? How careful we have to be. Archita Prabhu.
Maharaj, thank you for a very instructive class. You touched, obviously, on the heart of the matter. Conditioned soul is driven by lust. In family life, even, you have to be very, very careful. But it seems that even with so many clear instructions from Srila Prabhupada, on the matter, still there is debate. Our God brothers, they go around the world telling people, no, you don't have to be so strict. You know, it's not a crime if you fall down with your wife in this way or that way. You know, don't be so uptight. Some of our God brothers, as you know, even went to Narayan Maharaj and supposedly he said, Narayan Maharaj said that he doesn't know why Prabhupada had any business about what goes on in the bedroom between a man and a wife.
You're going a mile a minute and I can't keep up.
So my point is...
Because everything echoes here.
Yeah.
So if you could do a, you know, just drag it down by about 30%.
Okay. It seems that we need a very clear manual handed out. Maybe even in the morning we should recite, just like we recite the 10 offenses. The rules and regulations of family life are, and recite them also, because are still debating after 40 years, 50 years, what the rules and regulations are.
Oh, well, they're still debating about whether you need a guru. They're still debating about everything. 40 years is nothing. Come back in 400 years from now, they'll still be debating. There's nothing surprising there. There's always going to be some people who just don't get it. Otherwise, Prabhupada was clear. If you don't like what Prabhupada said, you can go someplace else and find somebody who, you know, like judge shopping. You go someplace else where somebody will tell you what you want to hear, or where you'll hear something that you want to hear. But Prabhupada didn't fail to make himself clear again and again and again and again and again. So I'm not quite sure what the debate is about, but seems unlikely that the debate could be about whether Prabhupada made himself clear or not. He made himself very clear. So then it's just a question of whether you want to follow or not, or whether you're willing to follow or not, or whether you do follow or not. But the instruction is not vague, imprecise. Prabhupada didn't pussyfoot.
Prabhupada makes it very clear in the 16th chapter that if a person knowingly violates the rules, he acts in lust, and such persons are destined to be condemned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Oh, even by condemned by material nature. It's not that we have to wait for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to throw a thunderbolt or to drive you down to hell or something like that. They make their own lives miserable. Just to take a current pastime, the internet is really great because it has all this pornography on it. And the advantage of the internet, of course, is that you can just plug in a URL and all there in the privacy of your own home, you can agitate your mind. But that's what the result is. You become more and more agitated, more and more disturbed, more and more crazy. It's not that you just, you know, swipe your credit card and you just enjoy something and, okay, that was nice. Your mind is now that much more agitated, that much more confused. Your spiritual nature, your intelligence even, is that much more covered. And we see that people do mad things. There was an old story, some big senator became attracted to a Midwestern senator, you know, from someplace like Ohio or one of those kind of places, became attracted to a strip dancer. And he was like an old man with a 40-year record in the Senate and, you know, respectable family, and became, you know, totally disgraced because he couldn't give up his lust for a slut. So that's how cruel Maya is. It's not that you have to wait for some sort of supernatural condemnation. some sort of esoteric karmic reaction that visits one in a future existence or causes trouble on the ethereal plane. Right here in this life, one becomes a fool. Mark Antony became a fool over Cleopatra. Okay, the time has come. Hare Krishna. All glory is to Srila Prabhupada. Goodbye. Hare Krishna. Excuse me?
I had a friendly disc on recently.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been just him, but I don't know. I've always kind of felt this also subtly in the back of my mind that people that really want to take Krishna consciousness very seriously.